Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Monday, February 10th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. Let's go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here as we kick off a new week on the program. One guest, but two segments coming your way here on this Monday edition of the show. I'll start things off with the Bettors Box, my MLB betting podcast. We'll do some of those here on Mondays until Kyle Hunter's ready to rejoin us for the full hour of the show. But I'll chat some more about MLB season win totals. Some more about how to evaluate some of those alternate standings metrics. Then also take a look at some of the different ways that I handicap these season win totals. Second half of today's show, Kyle Hunter, professional handicapper over at huntersportspicks.com, will join me, also of bettersportspicks.com. We'll talk with him about some college basketball stuff. We'll discuss a couple of regression candidates and a handful of games here for this week as he kind of works his way back into something of a normal routine here with his segments on the show. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Updated NBA power ratings from Noops over there this morning. Very good stuff there in that article, as always. We've got a preview of tonight's Colgate and Boston University game. I wrote that up here this morning. We got a Kings and Bucks preview from Admir Algic. We'll have daily NHL picks from Parker Michaels. We got a lot of stuff going on over at the website. Daily NBA picks from Chris Wassel as well. So much going on over at bangthebook.com. Make sure you head on over there. Check it all out. And also, too, while you're over there, we've got a new sportsbook section over at bangthebook.com where you can make some picks. It's an ad-based system, so you actually get to play with real money, but you don't have to put up any real money. It's a bet-for-free thing over at bangthebook.com. Check that out over in our picks section. Again, you get free 10 cents to your account. You get to play with that. Then, of course, you can watch ads to get new deposits out into your account. So, really interesting thing, kind of hard to explain here on the show today, but head on over there, check that out, read through the how-to section. There's also a little YouTube video that'll show you how to get set up, how to get involved. So really cool feature over at bangthebook.com. We're very happy to have that. So head on over there and check out that picks section. I'm sure you'll have a lot of fun over there. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook, BTB, and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. And obviously, still, no matter what time of the year it is, you want to be out there shopping around for the best prices, for the best lines, for the best odds. So head on over to DSI, but also while you're over at bangthebook.com playing around in that free sportsbook area, check out our sportsbook reviews. We've got the top books that take Bitcoin deposits. A lot of good stuff over there for you to check out at the website right now. All right, so I want to take a look here at some season win total stuff, and there's obviously a lot that goes into this process. And, you know, again, maybe season win totals aren't your market, but I think a lot of these concepts do have a lot of carryover impact to some of the different sports that are out there, win totals in different markets, stuff like that. So I really like to spend a lot of time on this. And, you know, obviously I'm putting together that MLB betting guide, which that'll come out here probably early to mid next week. I'm going through, got about five first drafts to finish up here, then go through the editing process, update with some of the transactions that have been done. So that MLB betting guide, probably looking at about 8 to 10 days or so before I get that out to everybody, but very much looking forward to that. Going to have the individual team preview write-ups over at bangthebook.com to go along with all the different player and team futures stuff. Then we're also going to put together a PDF. So you want to download that to a reading device, something like that, or you just want to have it all in one place, we'll be putting together a PDF for you as well. But again, I spend a lot of time on this, getting ready for the season. Helps me organize my thoughts, helps me look on an individual player level, stuff like that. I think there's a lot of good information in this MLB betting guide, but I did want to take some time here today while I've got this first segment to talk about, you know, how I evaluate what happened in the past, how I carry that forward to the next season here. And, you know, a lot happens over 162 games. There's no question about that. So what you want to take a look at here is how did the team get to its actual final record? You know, if they were a bad team, were they consistently bad? Were they a sub 500 team over 7 months throughout the course of the season? Were they a consistently good team? You know, were they very, very good for long stretches of time? Were they consistently posting winning months? Were they a team that had one bad month? Were they a team that had one good month? You know, you want to sort of take away some of the outliers in some of these instances where, you know, maybe a team just something went wrong. There was some sort of major injury, something like that, and they had a really bad month. Well, that's probably not who they are. If they had one really good month, well, maybe that was their ceiling, but maybe that's not a sustained level of play for that specific team. And one great example of this, one that I took advantage of with a season win total bet for the 2019 season, was the San Francisco Giants. In 2018, the Giants went 5-21 in the month of September. So they really quit on the season ultimately. They did have some injury considerations, stuff like that, but they kind of quit on the season. They were a 68-68 team through 136 games, but 5-21 over those last 26 games, all of a sudden they go 73-89. Was this really an 89 loss team? No, not really. I don't think so. What happened with their season win total? Well, for the 2019 season, it came out at 73.5. So this was a team that was playing on an 81 win pace for the majority of the season, had a bad September, kind of quit on the year, and their season win total comes out 73.5. That was the wrong kind of adjustment because this was a 500 team throughout most of the year. And yeah, maybe they don't go 500 in September. Maybe they don't go 13-13. But even if they find a way, you know, to go 10-16 here, they wind up winning 78 games. And 10-16, obviously not a great stretch, but they would have won 78 games. So their season win total comes out at 73.5. They went over that during the 2019 season on September 18th. So they had plenty of time to spare. That wound up being one of my favorite National League season win total picks last year. And again, it was an overreaction to what we just saw. The Giants were not a 5-21 caliber team over the course of the season, just over the final month of the season, because they quit, because there were injuries, so on and so forth. So the market overreacted to that small stretch, and we wound up with an easy winner going over 73.5. So as I look for a couple of those teams here this season, and again, this isn't to say these are going to be plays, but just to say that there can be some overreaction to what we just saw, the Los Angeles Angels, through their first 110 games, they were 56-54. That was going into the month of August. And as we know, very difficult season for them. They had the death of Tyler Skaggs. They had a lot of pitching injuries. And, of course, losing Skaggs took away a lot of the depth that they had. So this team, over the final 52 games, went 16-36. Now, were they that bad of a team? Maybe. I thought they overachieved most of the season. I thought they were a very flawed team over the course of the year. But now, they've got Anthony Rendon. They've made some other transactions. They've got some more pitching depth. So this is a team that was on pace last year to go 82-80. But instead, they went 72-90. So that big swing over the last 2 months where Mike Trout was hurt and they had a significant lack of depth, well, that kind of shaped the narrative of their season. Now, of course, they signed Anthony Rendon, so their season win total up quite a bit higher than it would have been otherwise. But these are the kinds of things you want to look at here. You know, are the Angels closer to a 500 team, or are they closer to a team that finished with 72 wins? I think even though I had a lot of problems with that team last year, they're still closer to a 500 team. Well, now they get Anthony Rendon. Now they get some more pitching depth. Now their season win total in the mid-80s. So you want to evaluate this team as if last year they were a 500 team. Now they made their additions. Now they added to that lineup. Maybe they get some better health from Tommy La Stella, Justin Upton, guys like that. Maybe they are more of an 85, 86 win team. That's where the win total is. So again, people are going to look at this and say, well, they won 72 games last year. Yeah, they got Rendon. Yeah, they got some pitching upgrades. But how are they going to win, you know, 13 or 14 more games? Well, to me, I think that's the wrong way to look at it, because they played like a 500 team over the majority of the season before circumstances kind of got in the way. So again, you really want to look back and see how these teams played over the majority of the season. Try to find those outliers And I think the best one here that we could take a look at is the Chicago Cubs. The Chicago Cubs last year on September 16th won their fifth game in a row to improve to 82-68. During that five-game winning streak to improve to 82-68, they won by 6, 10, 13, 9, and 3. They were winning some games in big fashion, but they finished the year 2-10. They wound up going 84-78. So this is a team that was 14 games over 500 with 12 games left to play. And they went 2-10 and finished 6 games over 500. So should that impact their season win total going into the next season? Did they just quit on Joe Madden? They also, in that span where they went 2-10, that started with a 2-run loss and then 5 consecutive 1-run losses. So that took them from being very much in the wild card race and even in the division race as well to not being in either one of them. So what does that mean? Is that who the Cubs are? I don't think so. I think the Cubs are more of that 82-68 team. It was a bad streak at a bad time. You know, if you go 2-10 in the middle of the season, it sucks, but it doesn't necessarily define how your season ends up. For the Cubs, it seemed like they sort of, you know, that sort of defined their season, going 2-10 over their last 12 games. They wound up falling well off the pace in the Central, fell short of the playoffs. I don't think that's who this team is. And also, too, to the Cubs, look, with their personnel, they should never go 84-78. But they did. And then, in the offseason, they didn't do anything. So there's a very low, very negative perception right now of the Chicago Cubs. But if this is a team that goes, you know, 6-6 over its final 12 games, you know, they go 88-74, it looks a lot different, doesn't it? A 4-game difference over their last 12 games really changes the complexion of their season. So those are things that you want to take a look at here. You know, the Cubs are being evaluated as this 84-78 team that didn't do anything over the winter. Maybe they didn't need to do anything. Maybe that last 12-game stretch doesn't define who they are as a team. Maybe the 82-68 record over their first 150 games defines who they are as a team. So as you're going through and as you're looking at futures prices, season win total stuff, all those kinds of things, look at the context of the season for these teams. You know, the Washington Nationals, 19-31 in their first 50 games. Then they go on and win the World Series as the wild card team. Are they a 19-31 team? No, absolutely not. But are they as good as they were over the last 4 months of the season? That's probably not the case either. So again, you want to look at the context of the season and sort of see how these teams kind of played over the long haul. Were there any big lulls? If there were, was somebody hurt? Something like that. The St. Louis Cardinals are a prime example. You know, Jack Flaherty with a simply elite second half. And the Cardinals wound up playing a whole lot better, as you would expect, with Jack Flaherty posting an ERA under 1 in the second half of the season. But what are the Cardinals? Who are the Cardinals? At the All-Star break, they were 44-44. And then Jack Flaherty just completely took over, was phenomenal in the second half. Some of the other guys got a little bit better in the second half. The bullpen got better in the second half. What are the Cardinals? You know, are they really a team that goes from 44-44 at the All-Star break to what they did after it? I think they were, what, 47-24 after the break, something like that. Is that who they are? Probably not. So these things are very important with the carryover to the next season, in particular with teams that don't make a lot of transactions. And of course, the teams that did make some transactions, evaluate what that means to them. Evaluate what that means to last season's body of work, then carry it over to this season's body of work. And we can also do that with some of these adjusted standings metrics that are out there. Pythagorean win-loss is one that's very, very common, very, very popular. Pythagorean win-loss is a run differential-based standings metric. To me, I like using it over the course of a season to isolate regression to the mean. Because what you get a lot of times is some teams do really, really well in one-run games. Some teams lose a lot of blowouts, or vice versa. Maybe some teams win a lot of blowouts, but don't have a lot of success in those one-run games. And all of that impacts your run differential. All of that impacts your Pythagorean win-loss. So, for example, a few teams to keep an eye on from last season, the Milwaukee Brewers. The Milwaukee Brewers were +8 in Pythagorean win-loss. They were +3 in run differential last season. So by run differential, they looked like a .500 team. But overall, they finished 89-73. In part because they were very good in one-run games at 27-18. So they played very well in those close games. That defined their season. That gave them 89 wins. Does that regress going into the next year? The Braves and the Giants. The San Francisco Giants last year, 38-16 in one-run games. It was the best record in baseball by a large margin. The Braves, 28-16 in one-run games. So when you're very good in one-run games and you win a lot of these close games, it can negatively impact your Pythagorean win-loss because what you're seeing is that they're winning a lot of close games and run differential-based standings metrics like Pythagorean win-loss kind of look for negative regression with that. On the flip side here, the Cubs, like I just mentioned, -6 in Pythagorean win-loss. They were 19-27 in one-run games. And like we just talked about, they were 2-10 over their last 12 games. So their Pythagorean win-loss was severely impacted. Well, their actual win-loss record, I should say, was severely impacted by what happened at the tail end of the season. So they were a better team than what their record would suggest. And that's what Pythagorean win-loss is telling us. And also that 2-10 stretch at the end of the year. The Baltimore Orioles, -6 in Pythagorean win-loss. They were 11-22 in one-run games. So they were awful in those toss-up types of games. And when you're already a very bad team, if you can't win about half of your one-run games, that's going to hurt you quite a bit. The Royals and the Reds were both -5. The Reds were 24-33 in one-run games. They played a lot of them. But the Reds, they're a big outlier in base runs and Pythagorean win-loss because over the course of the year, they played like a .500 or better team. They just didn't win enough one-run games. They finished the year 75-87, even though up until the last week of the season, they were about a .500 team based on Pythagorean win-loss, based on their run differential. So the Reds are a team that you look for positive regression from, and they also had a very, very good offseason. So the Reds, I mentioned this before, one of my favorite season win total over bets because A, they were not a 75-win team last year, and B, they added on to a team that should have been 82-80, 83-79, something like that. Their season win total over, one that I really like here going into the course of the season. Again, like I said, one-run games tend to regress year over year. And my handicapping style is regression analysis based in Major League Baseball. I try to look for degrees of regression. You know, you'll see signs of, yeah, that team should have done better at one-run games, but maybe their bullpen is bad. You know, maybe their bullpen just isn't very good and they can't win those types of games. So, yeah, they should get better, but maybe they won't. Other teams have a pretty decent bullpen and maybe just didn't fare well in one-run games for one reason or another. You know, maybe the offense just wasn't clutch. Maybe the offense didn't score in those high-leverage situations. Well, that can negatively impact your record, negatively impact your record in one-run games. So you want to try to look at the context of why teams were bad in one-run games or why teams were good in one-run games. Another standings metric I like to take a look at here is base runs. This is over at FanGraphs under the standings heading. Then you go to base runs. I like to look at this because base runs takes all of the individual outcomes, offensively and defensively, puts them together in a context-neutral environment, and then spits out a run differential. At that point, the run differential goes into a Pythagorean win-loss formula, and then we get an expected record for that team relative to base runs. Now, what is base runs? What is a context neutral environment? Let's say that we've got these six outcomes in these two very different orders. Let's say a team comes up to the plate and goes strikeout, strikeout, single, single, home run, strikeout. That is three runs scored. You get two singles with two outs, a three-run homer, and then a strikeout that ends the inning. That's three runs. Same six outcomes in a different order. Home run, single, single, strikeout, strikeout, strikeout. That's one run. So essentially what base runs does is it takes those six outcomes, puts them together in the hopper, and spits out a run differential. How many expected runs would you get in that situation? Then when it spits out that run differential in that context neutral environment, it puts together a record based on Pythagorean win-loss. So it takes all of those offensive outcomes, comes up with a run scored per game figure, takes all those individual outcomes when your team is pitching, comes up with a runs allowed figure, and then with that run differential, puts together an expected record. So basically what this is looking to do is it's looking to isolate bad luck and isolate that concept of cluster luck that I mentioned before that Joe Pita talks about in trading bases, where some teams are just very good in high leverage situations with runners in scoring position. Other teams are not. There's no year-to-year correlation in terms of performance with runners in scoring position. Good hitters will be good hitters all the time. Bad hitters will be bad hitters most of the time. So the good teams generally do better with runners in scoring position because they simply have better hitters. But there's no correlation year to year. If a team is first in runners in scoring position, you know, offense, that doesn't mean they're going to be first the following year. So you try to isolate this, try to find some of these teams that overachieved or some of these teams that negatively, you know, performed. And then you try to take advantage of that in the season win total market. So for example, the Reds, once again, if you put all of their outcomes together, offensively and defensively, they played more like an 84 and 78 team. It was unfortunate timing with the offense. Base runs projected the Reds to score 4.51 runs per game. They actually scored 4.33 runs per game. So that could make a substantial difference, especially when we circle back and see that the Reds were 24 and 33 in one-run games. So if they have some of those better outcomes in close games, maybe that changes everything. You know, maybe they would have had lesser outcomes in blowouts, but they would have won those games anyway. If you take away two runs from a 10-run win, add them to a one-run loss, all of a sudden that looks a whole lot different, doesn't it? So that's kind of what base runs is looking to achieve a little bit there. Another one here, the Tigers, who were awful last season, as we all know. But they were minus 7 in base runs. They scored 3.61 runs per game. According to the base runs formula with that context neutral environment, they should have scored 3.94 runs per game. Now for the Tigers, that's a difference of 0.33 runs per game. Over a 162 game season, that's over 53 more runs that they should have scored. But because of the timing of some of their outcomes, they were held down offensively. The Red Sox and the Cubs were a couple teams at minus 5. Again, the Yankees, right? The Yankees were plus 9 in base runs. According to the formula, they should have scored 5.6 runs per game. They actually scored 5.82 runs per game. Now, they should have allowed 4.77 runs per game, but they actually allowed 4.56 runs per game. So again, they should have scored 5.6 runs per game. They actually scored 5.82 runs per game. So that's a difference of 0.22 runs per game. You multiply that by 162, the Yankees, according to base runs, should have scored about 36 fewer runs over the course of the season. Again, they should have allowed 4.77 runs, but they actually allowed 4.56. That's a difference of 0.21 runs per game. times 162, that's 34 runs per game or runs per season more that they should have allowed. So we're talking about a Yankees team that, you know, should have scored about 36 fewer runs over the course of the season and should have allowed about 34 more runs over the course of the season. So you start talking about taking runs away and adding runs for the other team, and it makes a big difference. You know, if it happens in a 10-run game, it doesn't matter. If it happens in a 1-run game, it matters a lot. So that's what this base runs formula is trying to accomplish here. You know, the Rangers are another team that, you know, they were minus 68 in run differential, should have been minus 103 in run differential. And again, we don't know where those 35 runs come in. If they come in 1-run games, all of a sudden the Rangers are losing a lot more of those close games. If they come in games that they lost by 1 run, they lose by more, but they still wind up losing those games. So you don't necessarily know when it's going to happen with base runs, but what this all means is that you're trying to find teams that overperform or underperform, whether it was good luck or bad luck, whether it was just timing, whatever the case may be. You try to find some of these things, and then you capitalize on them from a season win total standpoint. The Brewers, for example, like I just mentioned, they were plus 3 in run differential last year. They played a lot more like a 500 team. But as we look at base runs, they should have scored 45 more runs for the season given the outcomes that they had. So what that tells me is that the Brewers probably struggled with runners in scoring position. And if that's the case, there's no guarantee that that happens this year. So base runs suggests that they should have been a little bit lower than where they were, but with a better record than just straight-up Pythagorean win-loss. So all of this stuff goes under consideration. And I know I'm spending a lot of time here on the season win total markets and all that, but these are large-scale, larger sample size examples of concepts that I try to look at over the course of the season, not just with baseball, but with a lot of sports. Because run differential, goal differential, point differential, these things matter. Records in close games, these things matter. We've been talking about that with Brad Powers with regards to college basketball. You know, teams that are winning or losing a lot of close games, that can have a regression to the mean effect as we go forward. And maybe it never happens, and that's when you lose money. Maybe it never happens, but a lot of times it will. But you want to look at the context of why this is happening. You know, the Brewers have a good bullpen. They're going to have a good bullpen. So maybe I don't expect as much of that negative regression from them. The Rangers, I don't think they have a very good bullpen. So maybe I would expect more negative regression out of a team like that. So those are things that you want to look at. That's kind of the framework that works for me, the things that make sense for me. And again, sometimes these are skewed by a team quitting at the end of the season like the Cubs did, like the Giants did 2 years ago. That's what you have to look into. That's what you have to find out. And I talk about a lot of that stuff in my MLB betting guide. So I'm very much looking forward to releasing that sometime, probably mid to late next week, hoping to get that out there. A lot of promotion to be coming up for that MLB betting guide as well. But again, very important information for you to keep an eye on and take a look at out there. For not just Major League Baseball, but for all of the sports as well. We got one more guest, one more segment here on this February 10th edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is with professional handicapper Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com, as well as bettersportspicks.com. Kyle, how's it going today, man?
It's going all right, man. I got to tell you, it's been a different last 10 days or so here. I had a major surgery on my knee, 6 month recovery I'm looking at, and no pressure on my leg here for 6 weeks. So things are going a little bit slower around here than they have been, trying to get a little bit of form and normalcy back. But fortunately, plays have gone well here lately. Had a 6-1 weekend, so that always helps.
Yeah, it definitely helps. Certainly helps to ease the pain in more than one way. But, you know, continued well wishes to you, man. I know you got a lot of our listeners in your corner as well. So hope you continue to be on the mend there. And, you know, I think maybe getting back to some semblance of normalcy here doing this segment, maybe kind of get you back on track some to a degree. And we got a lot of stuff to talk about here quickly. We got a handful of games we're going to discuss, got a fade and follow, and a few regression candidates as well. And let's go ahead and dive right in, and let's start with the fade and follow, because you've got a couple of very interesting teams here, one on the fade side, one on the follow side. And as our listeners know, we like to try to end with the glass half full, so we'll start with the fade team here first.
The fade team is Portland in the WCC. Look, this team's been getting blasted game in and game out. Then they go to double overtime in their last game against San Diego, and they lose. This is a really bad Portland team. You wonder how much longer Porter is going to be there. You know, when he came in, there was so much promise that things would improve. It hasn't happened. Portland really doesn't have much to play for now. I think this is a really bad team that's likely to mail it in here the rest of the season. They tried really hard in their last game and came up short. If you look at their games right before that, they were getting blasted game in and game out. I would not want anything to do with Portland here the rest of the regular season.
Well, and that's an important thing to think about here too. I mean, Portland's got five regular season games left in the conference. Then they've got the conference tournament, obviously. And that's, we're getting to that time. We're not quite there yet in most of these leagues, but we will, as the month goes along here, get to a point where teams do kind of mail in the rest of the season. They look ahead to that one shot they have in the conference tournament. Sometimes the teams don't even care about that, but motivation will start becoming a factor here in college basketball, probably in about 2 weeks' time or so, I would say.
Yeah, I think probably a week or two that will happen consistently across the board. I think Portland's a specific case in that, you know, they really are a bad team to start with. They're coming off a really discouraging loss, and they have nothing to play for at this point. Even if they do have something to play for, they're likely going to lose pretty badly in several of these games coming up. So I think that coming off that spot, especially here in the short term, I could see Portland getting blown out here once again.
Well, we haven't talked much about the Fun Belt in college basketball here so far, but we get a chance to do so here with a follow team that you're looking at. And in fact, before we started recording, you and I were talking a lot about one of their games here coming up this week.
Yeah, Texas State, the Bobcats. First of all, I think they're a really well-coached team. They're consistently a good team. They force a lot of turnovers. This year, they've not turned it over that much. They give up a lot of second chance points, and that's hurt them. They've had some very close losses. You look at their 3-point loss to Georgia Southern, 4-point loss at Little Rock, close loss at home against Troy, 2-point loss against UT Arlington, 3-point loss against App State. So this is a team that's actually won by quite a few points in several of their wins and has lost some really close games. That usually evens out a bit. And they have an interesting matchup coming up here against Little Rock on Thursday. Little Rock's been the best team in the Sun Belt so far this year, but Little Rock's one really big Achilles heel is the fact that they turn the ball over consistently on offense. I think it's likely that in that game, Texas State will be favored there. Hopefully it'll be a short number and we might be able to lay the points here. But I think that Texas State could be a good team to back here the rest of the way. I think they're a little bit better than they've shown so far this year. They've got a good bench, pretty experienced team, well-coached. I like them here the rest of the way in the Sun Belt.
Yeah, that Little Rock team, that came on Thursday night, by the way. Little Rock, 338th in the country in turnover percentage on offense. They do turn it over a lot. And like you said, some close losses here for Texas State. And, you know, we talk about this all the time, too. In particular, we talk about it with Conference USA and that UTSA-UTEP trip. That loss for Texas State to Appalachian State on Saturday might look bad to a lot of people, but that Coastal Carolina App State swing is very tough, particularly for the Texas teams in the Sun Belt, because App State is at elevation. I don't think people really realize that. That quick Thursday to Saturday turnaround, that's not that bad of a loss for Texas State, and maybe it does give us a cheaper price on Thursday.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the game against App State, because I was looking at the box score here right as you were talking, and Texas State was up by 18 points in that game, just completely fell apart at the end of the game, which kind of plays into what we've talked about this spot. It's really a difficult spot. The other thing that really strikes me about this game is Texas State had 2 free throws in that game. App State had 21 free throws. So, you know, I didn't watch the game. I don't know, but I mean, that's certainly curious that one team would have 2 free throws, the other team would have 21, and then Texas State loses by 3 points. So definitely looks like it could be a good buy low spot for Texas State.
And of course, we'll see what that number comes out at, but for our listeners out there, keep that one in mind for Thursday night there between Little Rock and Texas State. We'll look at a few regression candidates here, and these are ones that, I kind of took a look at here this morning. And Wright State is the first one for me. On the year, they're shooting 36.4% from three, but 42.9% in Horizon League play. Now, I know the Horizon League is not good. In particular, it's not a good defensive conference at all, but can Wright State really keep that up?
You wouldn't think so. I mean, Wright State's definitely a quality team. They're 21-5 this year. I think it says more about the Horizon League than anything else. It's definitely a conference that's down quite a bit this year. Wright State is not usually thought of as a team that's great on offense. You know, they've been better on defense than most teams in the Horizon League here for a while. Scott Nagy's a really good coach, and he's done a good job there with Wright State. I don't think they can keep shooting that kind of percentage. And I think what that would make me worry about is laying big numbers with them here down the stretch. We are going to be laying big numbers with them if you want to bet them against UIC, IUPUI, even at Cleveland State, games like that. So I would be a bit careful with Wright State. I would think that they will continue to play well, but covering a big number could be difficult when you expect, you know, that 43% number is going to come down a bit.
Yeah, last year in Horizon League play, they shot 31.3% from three in conference play. That was 10th. Now, all of a sudden, much, much different here this year. So maybe Wright State, some unders, maybe going against them, you know, in a big favorite role, something like that, could make a lot of sense here. We talked about one Texas team in Texas State. Let's talk about one down in Conference USA here, North Texas, where, you know, Conference USA, I think, is a very difficult conference to handicap this year. We're also now getting to the point where they reset that conference play schedule. One of the things they incorporated, I want to say maybe 2 years ago, where they only show the first half of the conference schedule. They see where the teams are, then they kind of pair them up together. Conference USA is weird in general, but North Texas, very weird this year. Last year, 294th in the country in three-point percentage. This year, they're at 39% and over 41% in conference play.
Yeah, North Texas is a bit of a unique case, in my opinion. I think that Grant McCausland is a very good coach. This team was badly injured last year. They fell apart at the end of the year, lost, what, six or eight games in a row in the regular season, partially because they had nobody healthy. North Texas has James Reese that transferred over from, I believe it was Buffalo, and he's been a very good outside shooter. Gibson is a good player. Hamlet's a good player. And I know they have DJ Draper, who's shooting 55.1% from long range. You wouldn't think he could keep shooting that. But in general, I do think North Texas is a good offensive team. Not quite as good as they look right now, obviously. It's hard to average 1.153 points per possession going forward as they are right now. But do you think North Texas is a very quality team who will be a tough out in the Conference USA tournament?
Well, it's something else that's interesting. Over on Bart Torvik's website, if you go to the specific conference pages, you can see here that so far North Texas has played the weakest strength of schedule in the conference, 14th out of the 14 teams. They played Western Kentucky once. They played Louisiana Tech once. And as that schedule resets, they put the good teams against the good teams for the most part. They put the bad teams against the bad teams, trying to strengthen their conference profile for the NCAA tournament. So North Texas will play a much tougher back part of the Conference USA schedule here. So maybe something of a regression candidate if that comes to fruition.
Yeah, I think that's certainly possible. I think North Texas is a team that I'm not anxious to go against, like I said, because I think they're a really well-coached team, a deep team. At the same time, like you said, they're going to be playing better teams. Certainly, you know, you're going to be playing Western Kentucky. You're going to be playing Louisiana Tech. In general, the Conference USA is down a good amount. Old Dominion's not nearly as good as they've been in past years. UTSA has not been what they should be. I still think UTSA might be a good buy-low team. But in general, I think Conference USA is down quite a bit.
Well, I hate to do this to you while you're already in pain, but we're going to talk Ivy League for a second here. I know it's going to feel like I'm sitting on your surgically repaired knee here for a minute. But the Penn Quakers are fascinating to me. They are shooting 31.2% from three, 280th in the nation. In their six Ivy League games, they're shooting 24.4% from three and over 56% from two. but they take a lot of threes. They're 62nd in the nation in three-point rate. However, that's down 6% now in Ivy League play, or down about 6.5% in Ivy League play. So it seems like maybe they've finally realized, hey, we're not very good at shooting threes. We should kind of stop doing that as often.
Yeah, I mean, I think Penn's a good team. They lost their first couple games in the Ivy League to Princeton. Now they've won four in a row, including a nice win over Harvard. I think Penn is one of those teams that has played a tough schedule non-conference, at least compared to what Ivy League teams usually do. I think Penn is a team that I'd rather buy than sell at this point. You know, this is a team where they play good defense. Penn has been known for playing good defense. Now, like you said, they're shooting such a good percentage from two-point range. They don't really need to shoot those threes. At the same point, I can't imagine they keep shooting 24% from three-point range like they have so far in the Ivy League. So Penn is a team that I would rather buy than sell at this point, definitely.
Yeah, maybe Penn kind of falls into that follow category. Maybe that's one we'll have to keep an eye on here with those Friday, Saturday back-to-backs out there in the Ivy League. One more that I wanted to touch on, and this isn't a regression candidate or anything, but this Akron and Eastern Michigan box score from over the weekend kind of piqued my interest here a little bit. Eastern Michigan, also an awful shooting team in conference play, by the way, particularly from three, but they lost 59-58 to Akron over the weekend. They had 38 free throw attempts. They had 38 field goal attempts. They made more field goals, 19, then they made free throws 18 and lost the game by one. So they were 18 of 38 from the free throw line and found a way to lose by a point. What a debacle. What a disaster.
Yeah, that game was on my radar the other day because I actually took Akron -1.5 small live when I saw they were losing by, 13 or something like that in the first half. Akron just laid waste to Eastern Michigan earlier this year. Akron looked like they didn't care at all about that game the other day. They were not motivated, fortunate to win in general, and then, of course, they win by 1 point. But, you know, Eastern Michigan, to me, is one of those teams that they want to make the game really ugly. They can't play a high-scoring game and try to get up and down with you because they're not good enough on offense. So they really want to slow the game down with that zone defense, muck it up. They were able to do that against Akron, and Akron, it looks pretty bad on you if you almost lose to a team that was 18 for 38 from the free throw line. Except at the same time, they were 17 for 27 from two-point range, Eastern Michigan was. So just a wild game. And as I said to you earlier, I think the MAC is pretty bad here in college basketball this year. Certainly not on the level of MAC college football bad so far this year, but we don't have any really good team from this conference like we've had the past few years in Buffalo.
Yeah, and it's weird, too, because, you look right now at Torvik's website, and Akron's the number one team here in the MAC, and, boy, they really haven't played like it. They were a big favorite in that game against Buffalo. They lose that game. They lose by a point at Kent State in the rivalry game. Then they have 8 days off to play Eastern Michigan. They come out looking like that. That's not a real good look for them. Bowling Green's been very good, but they're not highly rated here by Torvik. So this conference just, and it's always interesting. The MAC conference tournament, we talk about this year in and year out, and we're really not that far away from talking about it again, about a month or so away, probably. That conference tournament gets real weird. And obviously this year it could be extremely weird.
Yeah, it could be very weird. I wouldn't even know who I'd want to back in the MAC conference tournament at this point. I think Bowling Green is probably a team that I would expect to be pretty consistent, but their level can never be terribly high. Nobody is really that good here. Akron is probably as good as anybody, but we've seen that they're not really that great either. So definitely wide open.
All right. So we take a look at a few games here for this week, and we start on Tuesday night with one that you sent over to me that you wanted to touch on: Penn State and Purdue. A good one here in the Big Ten. These two teams, pretty evenly rated, probably going to have a fairly short line here for Purdue. What's on your mind about this game on Tuesday night?
There's a couple things about this game that I think are pretty interesting. Number one is Penn State has bucked this trend of home teams winning every single game in the Big Ten. I know it's not going to the same degree that it was earlier this year, but Penn State, I've been really impressed with them. I think Pat Chambers is certainly underrated as a coach. The fact that they could be 18-5 this year, have some really nice road wins. And I mean, they lost quite a bit from last year. So this is a Penn State team last year that went 14-18, and now they're 18-5, even though they lost what most people thought was their best defender from last year in Reeves. You know, this is a Penn State team that has really impressed me a lot. Obviously, that win at Michigan State was very impressive. They also won at Michigan. To me, Penn State is a team that is pretty dangerous. Now, if you look at Purdue, Purdue has been much better at home than they have on the road. I don't have the splits in front of me. Maybe you can find the splits on Bart Torvik's site, but I know that Purdue's offense has been much better at home than they've been on the road. Purdue is a team where, you know, on the road games, they've usually had to either try to win a really low-scoring game, slop it up, or they have lost pretty badly on the road a few times. That 63-37 loss at Illinois stands out in my mind, as does the loss to Rutgers. At the same time, Purdue has played really well at home. Their offense has been far better at home. They've shown signs of playing a bit quicker. I think this could be a good low over. I think Penn State is a team that wants to push the pace as much as anybody in the Big Ten. They're second in tempo in the Big Ten right now. They're second in offensive efficiency. I think Purdue has to score some points here. They're going to win this game. So I think, you know, if we get a low 130s, 131, 131 and a half here for a total, this could be a good over.
Yeah, we look at Purdue here in their 12 home games. They're actually number one in the country, according to Bart Torvik, in adjusted offensive efficiency. They're 36th in effective field goal percentage and 10th in three-point percentage. Again, this is a survey of all 353 teams at home. Purdue, number one in the country in adjusted offensive efficiency. In their 12 games in road or neutral settings, they are 190th in the country in adjusted offensive efficiency, 342nd in effective field goal percentage offense, 315th at 28.6% in three-point percentage. You will not have a bigger home road split offensively than what we see with Purdue.
No, I mean, that's really, truly amazing, especially from a team that really is a pretty good team. It's hard to imagine them being that bad on the road. At the same time, you know, Penn State's a really good offensive team, a decent defensive team, but I don't think that they can just shut down Purdue. Purdue should be able to score here. I think that this is one of the totals that will likely get bet up. So if you like the over here, I think you probably want to play it early on. And also, I think this is a good game as far as from a side standpoint. You know, Purdue's been very good at home. Penn State really rolling along here nicely. I don't think I have any real strong lean here on the side, but I do think this should be a good game and might be a little bit higher scoring than some people think.
We take a look at another game here on Tuesday night, and this is Rhode Island and Dayton out in the A-10. And I think at this point in time, I think we can safely say that Rhode Island is the second best team here in the A-10. They're 10-1 now. They swept the season series with VCU. Their only loss was to Richmond. That was a home loss. Came off of the rivalry game against Brown that they lost by 10. So maybe a little bit of a hangover there in that one. Dayton, again, over the weekend, struggling with St. Louis. They did win the game, but that was a St. Louis team that took them to overtime earlier on this year. First meeting between Rhode Island and Dayton here. Are the Flyers on upset alert at home?
Yeah, I mean, I like Dayton a lot as a team. I think Dayton's a very dangerous team. And a team that nobody's going to want to play in the NCAA tournament, you know, especially with a guy like Obi Toppin. It was going to be a mismatch for just about anybody. They also have some good outside shooters. Dayton just shoots the ball extremely well. 62.6% from two-point range so far this year. I do think this is a bit of a dangerous spot here because Rhode Island still hasn't gotten the fanfare that a lot of teams would that are 18-5 on the year. You know, so the Rams... you know, is Dayton going to be up for this game? You would think they should be based on the fact that Rhode Island has been so good here in the Atlantic 10. Rhode Island's 10-1, Dayton's 10-0 in the conference. So if Dayton drops a game like this, you know, obviously they'd be tied. I think in the loss column, at least, I think that to me, Dayton is clearly the best team here, but Dayton's going to be laying a pretty good price. So if if you want to look at Rhode Island plus the points, maybe you get 9 or 9.5 points or something like that. I assume we wouldn't quite get double digits here, but I think Rhode Island could be worth a good look. I think that, Rhode Island defensively has been very impressive this year. In the conference, 0.906 points per possession allowed. They're not fouling at all. It really has helped them that they're able to be so good at three-point defense, and they don't foul much at all. So I think this is a Rhode Island team that could give Dayton some trouble. I think Dayton will probably win this game, but I would lean toward Rhode Island plus the points. And I just want to say that since you brought up Rhode Island, we have to just say that, you know, Fats Russell, best name in college basketball, and he's been very good for this Rhode Island team so far this year.
Fats Russell is definitely on the all-name team there. There's no doubt about that. Speaking of all-name teams, I know we haven't talked as much here lately, but did you see that Wyoming signed a quarterback named Buck Coors? How awesome is that? Buck Coors.
That's amazing. I did see that. It kind of made my day when I saw that, actually. That'll be a good one to talk about.
One other quick thing here. It's kind of interesting. Obi Toppin's younger brother, Jacob, plays for Rhode Island. So that's kind of an interesting little side plot here to this game here coming up. But one other thing about Dayton, and shame on me for not putting this game in my situational article. They come off the Rhode Island game at home. Dayton plays at UMass on Saturday, where they're going to lay a monster road number. They're at VCU in the next game. And Dayton and VCU is a rivalry. The Dayton fan base loathes VCU. So I don't know if it's necessarily a two-way street, but I've got some Dayton people in my Twitter timeline. They do not like VCU. That spot on Saturday, they're not going to lose to UMass, but I don't know if they're going to be fully invested and engaged in covering that number. So Saturday betting against the Flyers may make some sense there on the road at UMass. We move ahead to Wednesday here, and we take a look at a pretty interesting game, Alabama and Auburn. And we're getting a lot of these revenge spots now, these rematch types of games here in conference play. Alabama embarrassed Auburn in Tuscaloosa by 19 earlier on this year, 83-64. Auburn got blown out the next game by Florida. I think they lost that game by 22. They haven't lost since, but they played three overtime games, including a double overtime game against Ole Miss. So Auburn spending a lot of energy here of late, but you got to think they get up for this one.
Yeah, I don't know what to think of this one. I have to be honest. I hope you have a stronger opinion on it than I do. Auburn, I mean, what do you make of them? How have they won all these games in overtime? I mean, some of these games that they've been winning, their chance of winning these games was almost nothing. And they come back and win in epic form. You think they can't keep getting so fortunate. I mean, at the same time, I don't want to go against them in this game because they were absolutely blasted by Alabama in the first one. So I don't know what to think of this game. I think that Auburn at 21-2 is certainly not nearly as good as their record would indicate. Auburn fans, but I think Auburn's a good team, but certainly not a team that is nearly as good as their record would indicate. You can't keep winning games the way that they've been winning all year and it not come back to bite you at some point. You know, they're going to have to either play better or they're not going to win as many games. And I think that this Alabama team is a bit of a question mark. I think Nate Oates has clearly done a good job with this team. It's his first year. They've had quite a bit of injuries. Both teams want to push pace here. I assume we get a pretty high scoring game. And I would note that the first game between these two was only 83-64, but it was 84 possessions in that game. So some really bad shooting numbers in that game. So if you like the over, don't be too scared away from the fact that they only scored 147 in the first game.
Yeah, I think Alabama's kind of tough to figure out. I mean, you know, obviously it's a team that's got a high ceiling. I mean, as we saw with blowing out Auburn, at the same time, you know, they're only 5-5 here in conference play. Now, they do have a double overtime loss to Florida, but also just gave up 102 points to Georgia in an overtime win. So I think Alabama is just one of those very high variance teams. And I feel like at this time of the year in college basketball, we probably don't need to gamble on those as much.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Bama is a pretty big unknown. I think that their program in general is going in the right direction, but we don't know what to make of them right now. I just think that Auburn is a team that I hate to lay too many points with. So I don't think I'll be betting this game, but certainly could be an interesting game there, especially since there's certainly no love lost between them.
All right, so we take a look at one more game here for this week. It's definitely great to get you back on the show here, Kyle. It's been awesome to chat with you once again. But Creighton and Seton Hall. Seton Hall just beat Villanova on the road for the first time since 1994. They have a three-game lead now in the Big East, and they take on a Creighton team that, you know, Creighton, obviously, with their dependence on jump shooting, they're certainly a team that you'd much rather take at home than on the road. Away from home, they're only 5-5 straight up on the year, 12-1 at home. So not an ideal situation for Creighton going on the road, but you won't find a worse spot for a team at home than this one for Seton Hall.
I don't know what to do with this game. You know, I think that Seton Hall is a team that everybody at this point realizes this is going to be a really dangerous team. I mean, who's going to want to play Seton Hall in the Big Dance? If you look at, you know, them defensively, Quincy McKnight's been really good defensively. Miles Powell can take over any game. We all know that. And then Mamu Kulashvili is back. You know, having a big guy down there, 6'11", very skilled big man. Seton Hall is not a team I'd want to play. This is a very dangerous team. At the same time, this is not a great spot for them. You're playing a Creighton team that really doesn't have anything to lose. Creighton shoots a lot from outside, like you mentioned. I don't know that I'd be invested in this game. I do think Seton Hall could be a team that, you know, I've heard other people say it. It's probably not a great value at this point because it's been so popular. But, you know, maybe some futures on Seton Hall make some sense because they look like a team that has enough to make a deep run in the NCAA tournament. I know they haven't really been there before and their coaching staff hasn't really proven it. But at the same time, I mean, it's wide open this year. I mean, who is really the clear favorite to win it all in the NCAA tournament? I don't think there's anybody that really stands out.
No, I don't think so either. I think it's a very difficult spot for Seton Hall. Again, obviously there are reasons to be worried about Creighton. If Creighton shoots well, I mean, they could very well knock off Seton Hall here in this one. But one other game I just want to touch on really briefly here, just because we're going to get some of these games now as we go forward. Montana and Weber State play each other here this week on Thursday night. And for those that don't know, massive rivalry game in the Big Sky. Not that it's necessarily a geographic thing, but just that those two teams for so many years in a row kind of fought it out for the top spot here. Now, Montana's down a little bit. Weber State is down quite a bit, but these Super Bowl types of games, particularly in these low major conferences, these are going to be popping up now a lot throughout the rest of the regular season.
Yeah, I think the one of the things that's most interesting about spots like this is the thing that you like to bring up a lot. The game after it could be really dangerous for these teams. So Weber State, a team that's way, way down. Jarrett Harding's a good player for them, but they don't really have good other options. And I know they've had several key injuries this year. So, you know, this is a Weber State team that is a bit healthier than they were for a while now that Cam Davis is back. I think Weber State plus the points would be my lean against Montana here. Like I said, I think it could be interesting to see what happens in this game because then Montana plays Idaho State in the next game, a game that they could easily overlook depending on how that game before goes, especially because they play Montana State the game after that. So, and Weber State, you know, if they put a big effort into this one and come up just short, you know, they might be a good fade also against Montana State on Saturday.
Yeah, actually, Weber State won the first meeting they did win that one at home 87-85 in overtime. So a big win there for Weber State. Montana with the revenge angle here. Again, these things are definitely things that you want to look at, particularly in these low major conferences here as we go throughout the rest of the regular season. But professional handicapper Kyle Hunter, you can find his work over at huntersportspicks.com and also bettersportspicks.com. What's going on over at those sites right now, man?
Well, I'll be honest, you know, I didn't plan any great speech or anything about what's going on at the sites. Like I said, I'm a little bit off of my normal, what I've been here of late, but starting to get things back to normal a little bit. Like I said, I've been on a good run here of late with my plays. Really good weekend. Hope to keep that going. You can go over to bettersportsfix.com. Check out the free members area where I'm going to be posting things like free first half plays, free live betting ideas, I'll also put some of my liens there that didn't quite make my premium card. I know that a lot of people have asked about that. I'm going to start putting some of those there. So you can go sign up for that, bettersportspicks.com. You can also go over to huntersportspicks.com. Have my premium selections up. I'll be lowering the prices here for the all basketball season pass here as we near March. It's really not that far away. So we'll lower the prices a bit here as we go forward.
Yeah, and as we look tomorrow, the first conference tournaments, 3 weeks away on March 3rd. Wow. So season flying by here, to say the least. But great to get Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com and bettersportspicks.com back on the program here at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter. Kyle, great to chat with you, man. Hope you're feeling better, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, man. Take care.
Good to chat with Kyle there, and certainly we continue to wish him the best as he recovers from a very painful procedure there. But coming up on our Tuesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll chat with Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. We'll talk about the first weekend of the XFL. We'll talk some NHL stuff, and then obviously take a look at this week's golf event. And we'll take a look at the Daytona 500 with Brian, who will be kind of our jack of all trades type of guy. We'll talk some NASCAR with him over the course of the season. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And I will talk to you again tomorrow.